In the forest glen, the door to the blockhouse was wide open, held in place by a tree branch. Sitting on some ammo boxes in the shade, the Rogan brothers were cleaning their weapons. Walking across the warm grass, Lily stopped near the doorway and bowed her head. The barefoot woman said nothing, waiting until they spoke first. Sometimes they didn't, and let her stand there all day while they played cards or slept. She fervently hoped this wasn't going to be one of those days, because their anger over finding out what they missed would be incalculable. The big men saw her, but continued their work. Robert clumsily sighted down the barrel of his rapid fire to make sure it was thoroughly clean. His left arm was wrapped in bandages from the arrow they had removed.
What's the bitch cooking at high noon? Bitch is going to faint from the heat. Fall in and cook herself.
Gotta taste better than anything else she cooks.
There is no fire. That's the radio.
Instantly, the three men dropped the disassembled rapid fires and plowed out of the blockhouse, pushing Lily aside. Charging across the sunny glen, the brothers could now clearly hear the bursts of static coming from their bikes.
Hello? You assholes awake? Repeat, anybody?
John grabbed a mic and thumbed the transmit switch.
Alan, is that you, bro?
Repeat? Well, it ain't our sister. But good news, they're here. Arrived last night.
All of them?
Yeah, all of them.
Where are you? The ruins? The water hole? Broke Neck? Iron Mesa?
Broke Neck. Repeat, I'm in Broke Neck. The fragging little muty baron was right. But more importantly...
Impatiently, John reached out a hand, but then stayed the urge to fiddle with the controls. The fancy equipment handled such things all by itself and didn't need any help. Strange as that sounded. Until today, the Elder Rogan would have sworn that radios were only good for a couple hundred feet under ideal conditions, often a lot less. But these models that Delphi had given them could cover miles in open territory. Miles. Even more at night, although John didn't know why. Did the sun interfere with the radio? Long-range communications. It was a whole new idea to the Rogans, and had opened a wealth of wreck possibilities in their hunt for the Outlanders. Plus, there now was the potential of rebellion against their hated master. They knew that Delphi listened to every word they said on the device and could track the bikes by some kind of pre-dark tech totally beyond their understanding. But knowing that he listened to them, the brothers had worked out a plan to get some revenge should the opportunity present itself.
Alan, we can't hear you no more. You still there, boy?
He said that Ryan and Doc are at Broke Neckville. Now go get them, and do not fail. I would be most displeased. Goodbye for now.
Pressing the transmit button on the side of the mic, John started to ask a question, but all of the radios went silent.
Dead as dirt. I guess they ain't needed no more.
And the same thing will happen to us after Delphi has what he wants.
I know that.
Glancing skyward at the fiery sun, John thoughtfully ran a hand across the satiny paint of the pre-dark machine. The black metal was cool to the touch, and he remembered Delphi saying something about the bikes needing to absorb sunlight to charge the electric engines. Were heat and light the same thing? Maybe. Interesting.
What now, brother? Should we wait for dark, or...
We ride.
John climbed onto the two-wheeler and twisted the grips on the handlebar. The dashboard came to life with a dozen glowing meters and gauges.
Ed, get the blasters. Robert, lock Lily up in the blockhouse. And give her some water this time. I don't know when we're coming back.
Lily said nothing, waiting for her fate. As his brothers got busy, John reached inside his shirt to pull out a heavy revolver, a blaster not given to them by Delphi, but taken from a one-eyed baron before they'd nailed him screaming to a cross. Each of the brothers had a secret arsenal of weapons taken from their victims. Hand blasters, plast charges, switchblade knives, even an implogren. All sorts of things. From the very beginning, Delphi had treated them like dogs, stoop animals to be whipped and trained. But old dogs could learn new tricks, John thought to himself with a grim expression. When the Rogans delivered Doc Tanner alive to Delphi, he'd go crazy with delight, which made it the perfect time to strike back at their hated master. And the first move would be to distract Delphi by killing Tanner. The Brokeneck Tavern was located near the marketplace and the whipping post, a grim reminder of the painful fate that would befall any sect man found drunk on duty. Ryan approved of the iron-fisted subtlety. Whatever the building had been in the past was gone under decades of sandblasting from the desert winds and the addition of adobe brick walls to support the exterior of the structure. A poorly carved wooden bottle hung above the front door to let folks know this was a tavern. And there was also a rather surprisingly good painting across the front of the mud bricks, showing laughing people with huge frothy mugs raised high as beautiful topless women danced on tabletops laden with steaming food. Shifting the med kit slung over her shoulder, Mildred sneered. So advertising had finally crawled from the grave of the nuclear war, she thought. There was no porch, but a tattered awning stretched out from the roof to offer some small measure of shade to the couple of men sitting on plastic milk crates in front of the building. A middle-aged man was whittling on a dried gourd, every now and then blowing into the stem to produce musical tones. But he'd frown unhappily with the result and return to carefully carving on the husk some more. Smoking a hand-rolled cig, the young man was dressed in only denim shorts, his lean body rippling with hard muscle. Outside of the small patch of shade was a swayback horse and a bicycle, both lashed securely to a piece of lead pipe sticking out of the ground. The rusty bike seemed to have been there for years, and the horse had seen better days as well. Its back was deeply bowed, and the coat dappled with scars. The chestnut mare was trembling from the tremendous effort of simply standing upright. It was plain to see that soon the beast would die from sheer age, to become boots and belts, the flesh smoked into jerky, and the bones boiled down into glue for the crossbow arrows. Even in death, the horse would serve its owners. As the companions pushed open the screen door, the young man waved his cig in greeting, and Jack caught a whiff of the smoke, some awful mix of corn silk and Mary Jane, obviously a local taste. The interior of the tavern was dark. The windows were boarded shut, probably to keep out the wind-blown sand and to prevent drunks from smashing the irreplaceable sheets of pre-dark glass. The cool air was smoky from the fumes of the lamps on the tables. In the flickering glow of the lanterns, the companions could see that the tavern was nearly empty, except for a couple of scantily dressed gaudy sluts sitting at a table near the bar. One of the table legs was short and supported by an adobe brick to make the piece of furniture stay level. Flashing fake smiles, the women perked up as the companions entered. But when none of the outlanders seemed interested, the women let the expressions fade away, then went back to playing a game of dominoes and smoking their cigs. Behind them, a flight of stairs led to the second floor, where the ladies apparently conducted their business. Wearily glancing around, Ryan saw that the walls were made of the original red brick and displayed a lot of pre-dark posters of different cities from around the world. Obviously loot from a travel agency. The posters were torn and faded, but Mildred felt a lump form in her throat at the sight of New York and the mighty Empire State Building, London and Big Ben, San Francisco and the Golden Gate Bridge, the ultra-modern opera house in Sydney, Australia. She turned away from the depressing sight. Gone. All of the once great cities were long gone now, either crumbling into ruins or merely radioactive holes in the fused ground. Across the tavern was an ornate grandfather clock in the far corner, and nearby stood a huge grand piano, not an upright or a spinet, or even a baby grand, but a full-size, concert-class grand piano. Then the physician did a double-take. The damn thing was enormous. The black veneer had peeled away in spots, exposing the dark wood underneath, but the lid was raised, showing that all of the strings were still intact. Incredible. Jack glanced at the man-sized front door.
How'd he get that in?
It must have been here originally. Or else one of the rear walls was missing and they hauled it inside before putting up the adobe bricks.
The teen nodded. Yeah, that made sense. The simple answers were usually correct. The tables in the tavern were everything from an office desk to a wooden door placed on top of a refrigerator lying sideways on the floor. At the far end of the room was a counter made of wooden boards laid on more orange highway crash barrels. A bald man in an apron was wiping down the counter with a rag. His shirt was cut off at the shoulders, displaying numerous tattoos, including a vaguely familiar compass and square. It took Doc a minute before he recognized the ancient symbol of the Freemasons. The ancient fraternity had survived the nuke war? Well, well, His father would have been highly pleased to know that. God rest his soul. Filling the wall behind the bartender was a jigsaw mirror composed of countless shapes and sizes, but the reflection made the tavern seem brighter and larger. Wooden shelves around the mirror were lined with drinking containers of every type imaginable. Glass tumblers, ceramic mugs, crystal goblets, and plastic cups bearing the colorful logos of famous football teams. The warriors of the gridiron reduced to amusing figures for the grim soldiers of the Deathlands to puzzle over. With Ryan leading the way, the companions chose a large redwood table that had formerly been a spool of industrial cable. The round table was situated near the empty fireplace, where they could keep a watch on the front door. Taking chairs from other tables, the companions sat and placed their blasters on the tabletop to deter any trouble from drunks.
Hey, Gertie! Customers!
From out of a back room exploded a mannish woman with a broken nose, tattoos, and close-cropped blonde hair. Her dress was made of 100 different squares of material in a bewildering array of colors. Gertie was also wearing a greasy apron, more suitable for arc welding than serving. Then, to belie the rough demeanor, the woman boasted a tremendous bosom. It was absolutely colossal, barely contained in the patchwork dress. Every man in the room sneaked an appreciative glance, and every woman gave an expression of sympathy. Her back had to be in agony at the end of the day from hauling around that amount of jiggling weight.
Oh, it's you folks. Thought you'd be eating with the Baron.
Not today. What do you have?
She rested a fist on her hip in the style of every waitress in the history of the world.
What do you got?
Reaching into a pocket, Ryan laid a couple live rounds of brass on the table. They were .22 caliber shells, a size that didn't fit any of the weapons used by the companions. But for most of the Deathlands, ammo was the only currency that mattered, and it always got the best exchange rate.
That ain't worth shit here. Sorry. Just wanted to see if you were trying to pull rank or something. But we heard what you did for the Baron. The meal's on the house.
Across the room, the gaudy sluts looked up at that, their sigs drooping in stern disapproval.
Of course that doesn't cover Shiner sluts. We love the boy, but we gotta make a living, you know.
Ryan rolled the cartridge across the wooden surface.
No problem. Food and shine.
Gertie made the catch with one hand and bit the cartridge to make sure it wasn't corroded or varnished wood. Satisfied, she tucked it away between her ample breasts. With the amount of sheer cleavage on display, JB casually wondered what else was hidden there. Maybe a couple of war wags?
For chow, we got some roast prairie dog. Very nice. Then lizard stew and fried rabbit. Plus, there's some roast horse. That probably won't ace you too quickly if you're strong.
There were a lot of unsavory things that could be tossed into a stew to make it last longer, Mildred thought. Some of them extremely unhealthy.
We'll have the rabbit.
Gertie smiled generously, scratching under her breast.
Smart choice. This ain't the Baron's table, and sure as shit ain't no redoubt. But the rabbit is fresh, and it wasn't a muty. Well, not much of one anyway. What's a couple of legs amongst friends, eh?
Galvanized motionless, the companion said nothing. Then Ryan slowly looked up at the woman.
What was that word you used?
Puzzled, Gertie started to repeat the old joke about extra legs, then realized it was the other part they meant.
Shitfire, ain't you folks ever heard of the legend of the redoubts?
None of the companions spoke or moved.
Guess not. Well, the short version is that there's some sort of underground fort up in the Mohawk Mountains near a bridge, and it's filled with blasters and bread and wags and all sorts of wonderful shit.
Placing both hands on the table, she leaned forward, the position straining her dress to the breaking point.
Guarded by armored muties, of course.
She grinned, enjoying their stunned reactions. The stoop bastards were listening as if this was important. Nobody was even looking down her dress.
And even the doors will chill you if you touch them wrong. Zap! You're ash in the wind.
Really? Sounds fascinating. And where was that again, dear lady?
Standing straight, Gertie shifted her stance to ease her aching lower back.
Dunno. Just somewhere in the hills. Near a bridge, I think. Or was it a mine?
She jerked a thumb at the bartender.
Buy him a couple drinks, and Cougar will tell you all sorts of stuff.
You bet I will. They're supposed to have booze by the gallon and barrels of brass.
And dancing girls, I heard. And clean water.
Sounds aces to me. So why are you here and not searching for this readout?
Oh, lots of folks have gone looking, but nobody ever came back.
JB winked at Ryan.
Where was that again? The Moorwalk Mountains?
No, the Mohawk Mountains. They're just to the west and north of here. Can't miss them.
Thanks a lot, bitch.
Cougar gave the woman a dirty look. He had been planning to string the Outlanders along into buying drinks for the rest of the night with that bit of info.
Underground forts, metal doors. What a load of muty shit.
The waitress then exited into the back room.
Mother Gaia, how is this possible? Think somebody found a redoubt?
Lots of people have before, but they generally end up chilling each other, and that keeps the base a secret.
Still, this gives us an option, rather than trying to swim upstream to reach Blaster Base 1.
I don't like this. Anything that seems too good to be true most often is. I'm just wondering if this is a lucky break or another damn trap.
Baron Hammond would know.
Maybe this is why he had the stable hand send us here.
Perhaps.
Just then, Gertie reappeared, carrying a wooden board stacked with hubcaps piled with steaming meat. There was also a ceramic jug with a cork in the top, and a collection of coffee mugs.
Eat fast. Then we go see the Baron.
I'll be fucking delighted when we leave this pest hole. There are just too damn many odd things going on here, and I'll be a lot happier once Broke Neck is growing small behind us.
Amen to that.
Baron Harmond sat bolt upright in his bed and clutched his throbbing temples as blood trickled from his nose.
Traitor! Guards! Sound the alarm! Guards!
Instantly, the heavy door to the bedroom was thrown open by Chief Bateman and several Sekhmen waving blasters.
What is it, Baron?
The men looked around for any sign of an attacker, but the books in the room seemed normal and undisturbed.
Too late.
The boy covered his face with both hands. Tears started rolling down his cheeks.
It's too late. It's already here.
What is?
Baron Harmond raised his anguished face to the window and looked down upon his vill.
Death.